everybody, whether you're the president of a company or the paperboy, everybody has the exact same amount of time. You and I both have 24 hours a day. No more, no less. The question is, what do you do with your time?
Real quick, my friends, go get my new book. It's called The Power to Publish, and it's at the top of the page of zbooks.co at the link, My New Book. And it's going to help you with all of your self-publishing needs. Okay, back to that podcast. Welcome to the ZBooks Successful Authors Podcast. And with me, I have one of my childhood heroes. Well, not exactly childhood heroes. I've been following him since 2015 when I was a childhood blogger, when I first started blogging. And he is the head honcho, the big gun, the number one side hustler in the world. Help me welcome Nick Loper of Side Hustle Nation. How you doing, Nick?
Doing well, Eric. Thank you for that intro. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, it's so cool to hook up with you finally. I was looking at the blog today and I saw one of my comments from February 2016. And I know that was the Rosemary Gruner Pinterest tactics and strategies.
That was a classic episode for sure.
Oh, yeah. And a lot has changed in Pinterest since then. And and I know I'd been following you before that too. So it's excellent to have you here. So where are you right now?
Sunny California. So we're about a half hour east of Oakland, a little town called Livermore.
Really? Yeah. My dad is in San Jose and I know that area well. But Livermore, isn't that where they used to have the drag races?
I don't know. Okay. I've never been a part of it.
I'm older than you, so maybe it's gone. But oh, but the most important question I forgot is the side hustle Shih Tzu at your side right now?
He is. He's actually sleeping right behind me. So I'm recording from my kid's bedroom closet, and you got the bunk beds right behind me, and he is fast asleep on there.
Cool. And why a Shih Tzu and not a pit bull?
And well, it was very much my wife's dog at the beginning. She had a Shih Tzu growing up, and so that was the short list of breeds that she was considering. I was actually out of town on a work trip, and you know, she went to the breeder with her friend, and she's like, "Oh my gosh, he's so cute! I have to get him." Like, okay, we're getting a dog. I did not want the extra like responsibility for that, but you know, he's become a very important part of the family since then.
And my in-laws have a Shih Tzu, and he looks like Samuel Jackson. Does yours have any nicknames?
He kind of looks like an Ewok. That's probably what he most resembles. So, you know, you stick him in the snow, he kind of looks like a polar bear. But
that's pretty cool. Yeah. All right. Okay. Let's get serious for a little. You know.
Okay. Let's go.
Yeah. What got you started, and what is your big why?
Started in self-publishing?
No. Yeah. Well, side hustling in the very beginning, because self-publishing wasn't your first thing, was it?
It was not. My first book was in 2012, but I was already full-time self-employed at that point. I mean, really, the big motivating factor was like to be able to control my own calendar, to control my own schedule. And it's a little weird because I, for the most part, still work probably 30, 40 hours a week, but it's like, I'm doing it for myself instead of doing it for somebody else for the next 30, 40 years. Like that was a really scary thing. And like, I was a good student in school. And so the prospect of, you know, going through this whole process and then graduating and then doing what you're quote, you know, supposed to do. And like, that was kind of scary. It was like, look, you're a smart guy. You ought to be able to figure out a better way, a different way. And so that was really, really motivating to figure out an alternative path rather than just trying to climb the corporate ladder, trying to climb somebody else's corporate ladder.
Yeah. And because it's very important that your dream side hustle just doesn't become another nightmare job, you know?
Yeah, that's the last thing that you need.
Yeah. So what was the first, what was like the first contact you made? What did you do? Just go Google how to make money online or?
I've definitely Googled that, as I'm sure most of us have at some point. My first business was in the affiliate marketing space. It was a comparison shopping site for footwear. So it would pull in the catalogs from Zappos and Amazon. We didn't probably have Amazon in the early days, but Zappos and all these other different online shoe sellers and tell you where you can find the best price on your next pair of shoes and would collect affiliate commissions when somebody bought through that site.
Mm-hmm. And then that evolved into Side Hustle Nation, or tell us about that evolution.
Yeah, that was the main focus for a long time. So 3 years, nights and weekends, side hustling, building up that business. Finally was confident or got up the nerve to quit my day job and run the shoe business full time. And it was probably 5 years deep into doing that full time where, you know, and I'd started other projects on the side before this as well, but most of them kind of flopped. And it was during some soul searching of like, well, what do you want to be known for when people Google you? What do you never get tired about talking about? What really gets you excited? And this idea of the side hustle, like this lower risk brand of entrepreneurship, really started to stand out because I'll geek out on different business ideas, business models all day long. That was really exciting. And most of the content surrounding entrepreneurship that I could find was the Silicon Valley narrative of like, you're going to jump off a cliff, you're going to raise venture capital, you're going to figure out how to build your parachute on the way down. That for me was not, you know, that was not my experience. And mostly other people that I talked to, like real, you know, regular people that I talked to, that wasn't their experience either. So I felt like there was this untapped market to talk about, no, like you can start something low risk, you can do it on the side and you can build it up in that way.
Yeah. Your Side Hustle Nation website is such a rich resource, and you have, I think your first, the first one you recommend people to go to is like your blog post of like, what is it, 67 different side hustles that you could do, right?
Yeah, and the list keeps growing. So
yeah,
I think it started at 79, and then it was 99, and now I stopped updating the title, but it's well over 100 at this point.
Wow. Yeah. So now that we're on that, how do you make sure that your new side hustle doesn't become a nightmare job? Any tips?
Well, it's not always going to be rainbows and unicorns for sure, but you can set it up in such a way that it's something that you're interested in, that you can work towards mastery on, that you have some autonomy and greater purpose towards what you're doing, where it's like, okay, who am I serving? How am I helping them? How is that helping me and my family? Mm-hmm. Those types of things can kind of provide the motivation to keep you going when times do get hard. But it's like in the shoe business, for example, like I'm not a sneakerhead. I don't care. I mean, I probably bought 3 pairs of shoes over the course of almost 10 years of having this business. Like, it was not my best customer at all. But the process of, you know, optimizing the site and figuring out how to drive profitable traffic with AdWords and, you know, analyzing the performance of all that stuff, like that was really interesting and empowering and fun. And, you know, bringing on outside help to figure that out so I could do different projects. Like, it was like the behind the scenes business stuff was way more interesting than the actual topic. So
yeah,
if the topic is not interesting, you have to find some excitement, some interest in another part of the business. Otherwise, you're just going to be bored. And that's what entrepreneurship is for the most part, is like, you know, bumping up against the next challenge. And mm-hmm. and that's, I don't know, I'm like, I learn more every day. Like, I'm trying to figure out how to do this thing, you know, that's just before this call. It's like, did a video chat with a guy who was making money renting out his car on Turo. And so now I have the new challenge of like, you know, slicing up his transcript, trying to make a cool video for YouTube, trying to storyboard the thing. Like, it's a total new challenge for me.
Have you gotten to the point where you've hired somebody yet, or are you just subcontracting?
Just subcontracting at this point, actually a handful of different contractors.
Yeah.
So right now I have a podcast editing service who kind of takes the raw audio and cleans that up for me in large parts, like based on the transcript. Like I can, mm-hmm. you know, just cross out sections that I don't want. They make it sound good. There's a handful of freelance writers that I work with to produce content for the site and for like the show notes for the podcast, like the episode summaries for the podcast. I've got I could call it like my website insurance service called ZenWP. I think it's ZenWP.co. And it's just like this monthly subscription. Like if anything breaks on your WordPress site or if you need anything updated, like they're just kind of on call to deal with that. And cool. then there's a service called OK Relax that I've been using for years and years. And this is kind of my default general admin dedicated virtual assistant, really affordable service. I'm on my fourth assistant with them. They've all been really reliable and pretty strong. So based in the Philippines. And so Angel is my assistant now. She's in charge of, you know, formatting blog posts and installing lead magnets and running standard weekly reports and just kind of stuff that doesn't necessarily take a ton of time, but is pretty routine. And so she can figure out how to get that done.
And what was that service or platform called?
That was okrelax.com.
That's cool. That's a good name. They got a good one on that.
Yes.
And you mentioned another platform before that.
That was ZenWP for WordPress maintenance and support.
Cool. Right on. And one of the first things that got you on my radar was Steve Scott. I think he did a blog post interview, or you did a guest post on his blog, behind the scenes of a 20,000 download book launch. And that one blew my socks off, and a lot of people too. And that was just awesome. And what did you, but that is actually, would you launch a book like that again?
That's a good question. So that post detailed the launch of a book I did called Work Smarter, which was did the KDP free promo for 4.5 days during that launch. That's a fantastic way to go if you don't have a built-in audience, if you don't necessarily want to see the book as a huge revenue source on its own, but you see that as an entry point to your brand. And really that's what pretty much all books are these days, unless you're going the Steve Scott route and you want to write 100 different books and just kind of build a portfolio type of business. But I still think it's viable. I'm sure the algorithms and specific tactics around that have changed since 2014.
Yeah, I was a little more involved with your Buy Buttons book. And so what did you do differently then with that one?
So Buy Buttons launched at 99 cents instead of free. And the big difference there was I had a much larger audience of my own to tap into and rely on for that. So for the sake of comparison, Work Smarter launched, probably had an email list of around 1,000 people, maybe even a little bit less. Mm-hmm. With Buy Buttons, by the time Buy Buttons launched in 2016, that was 35,000.
Oh, nice.
A much bigger group to tap into. So I recruited maybe 50 or so people to be part of the launch team, mm-hmm. And quietly put and kind of gave them a behind the scenes look at, you know, my production process. Like here's my content writing calendar. And like I wrote the book in not start to finish, but I wrote it in sections. And so I, you know, would show them kind of like the outline file, be like, okay, I need to knock out this section and this section. I'm still looking for sources for this section. What do you guys think of these cover concepts? What do you guys think of this introduction? What do you think of the subtitles? And they would vote on all this stuff. So they're kind of involved and had a little bit of a vested interest in the process. Quietly uploaded the draft to Amazon or the finished version to Amazon and let them all, I gave them all advanced copies. It was like, hey, you know, it's 99 cents. If you want to go buy a copy, go buy a copy. Mm-hmm. Just so your eventual review, if shows up as verified, which for what it's worth, it might be or something.
Yeah.
And so on the big public launch day, already had double digits worth of reviews thanks to that launch team. So that was the big difference going in. And so that one went at 99 cents for the first week or so, and then kind of slowly stair-stepped up the price to $2.99 and then I think $3.99. I think it's been at $3.99 for a few years now.
And did you do the pre-launch phase? Pre-sale phase on Amazon, I mean.
I didn't do any pre-sale. And the reason that I don't like the pre-sale thing is, you know, unless you're trying to hit some bestseller list, is because when you go to do this big public launch, people show up on day one and there's no reviews for the book. It's like, still looks like this ghost town. And if you're Tim Ferriss, if you're Chris Guillebeau, if you're even Pat Flynn to a certain extent, like you can get away with that, but I didn't feel like I felt like I could make a bigger impact and spread, you know, have the algorithms working in my favor a little bit better if I could have had that listing seeded with some reviews.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. Yeah. Like I said, I was a little bit more involved with that. I think I was in your Facebook group and that was pretty cool. By the way, what do you think about Facebook groups? A lot of people are saying, oh, they don't even do email lists anymore. They're just making a Facebook group.
I think your reach is probably going to be better on email lists, or it's like a hedge at least.
Yeah.
I mean, the more places I have to get in touch with somebody, the better. Mm-hmm. For sure. It was a little bit tricky to manage that launch team because, you know, some people were in Facebook, some people were on the, you know, just on the email list or kind of the informal Excel sheet that I made. Some people were in both. And so it's like a little bit of manual work in messaging the people. You know, it would be awesome to just, hey, make a post in the Facebook group and say, you know, now I can reach everybody, but that wasn't the case.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I was thinking because if you had a 35,000 list, then, it might've been, a way to leverage not the SEO, but the shares and the virality of the Facebook group. I mean, I don't know. Did you have any kind of way to do that?
So what I ended up doing as far as social on that launch was, so the book was called Buy Buttons. And so I found this little like button type of graphic. And I remember sharing that on Facebook and making it public. I don't know if I included a link in the post itself since, or maybe I don't know, because there's always some algorithm thing with Facebook. It's like, well, if you put a link in, they're not going to spread it as far and wide. Didn't tag a bunch of people, but had a bunch of people agree to share that in, you know, as part of the launch team too. And so they saw that post, or I kind of, here's the permalink for this post. If you want to share this, that'd be awesome.
Hmm. Interesting.
And, you know, drive as much, you know, social love to that one piece of content.
Yeah. So, what got you started in writing? Was it to make another source of income or because you wanted to be a writer or what?
I feel like I've been writing for, you know, forever. The first book that I did was in 2012. It was on how to hire and work with virtual assistants. The reason that I published the book was actually because the website I had a virtual assistant kind of directory and review site. Mm-hmm. At that time, especially the design of the site was pretty gross looking. Like it wasn't the most authoritative looking site. So I was like, my theory was people would come to the site, see, oh, he wrote the book on the topic. He seems trustworthy. I'll go buy the book and, you know, go read the reviews on the site. The interesting thing is what actually ended up happening because of, you know, affiliate link tracking and stuff, you could kind of tell like, oh, very few people actually did what I thought they were going to do, you know, come to the site and go buy the book on Amazon. More people discovered the book on Amazon and then took the opposite path, then went and discovered the site. So that was really interesting, kind of eye-opening to the power of Amazon as a search engine on its own.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had the same experiences, but my favorite thing is to publish a free book just to get people going to my website, you know? So, any new books on the horizon?
I mean, there's always more coming down the pipeline. None that I have started at the moment. The most recent book project was updating a book from 2015 called The Side Hustle Path, and actually just ended up pretty much bulldozing it and rewriting it. And now it's just called The Side Hustle. And so that's similar to what you're just saying. That's perma-free on Amazon as kind of a intro to, you know, intro to side hustling. You know, I was just trying to, you know, be discovered in this search engine and hopefully impress people and get people, engaged and excited about this idea and this brand.
Yeah, right on. And that's on Amazon right now?
Yes. SideHustleNation.com/book will get you okay. Over there.
Awesome. SideHustleNation.com/book. All right. I'm going to write that down. Cool. And then, but you are the master side hustler, and every millionaire has 7 streams of income, somebody said. So what are your 7 streams, or what's your favorite one?
Oh my goodness. I actually have some posts on this. Like, here are the 15 streams of income I'm working on right now.
Yeah,
here
15.
23
yeah.
different ways I make passive income or something. And some of those are very, very small. I'll tell you the biggest ones. The biggest ones for me are sponsorships on the Side Hustle Show. It's turned into a pretty significant income stream over the past couple of years. Affiliate offers through the site, which generally, you know, probably 2/3, 3/4 of the traffic comes from SEO. So become more intentional around affiliate relationships over there. The third stool would be my own like side hustle experiments, and I'll lump self-publishing into that. I'll lump Udemy courses, Fiverr sales, Clarity.fm consulting calls, stuff like that into that third bucket. And then beyond that, you know, one thing that I've tried to do consciously over the last few years is, you know, figure out a way to get paid over and over again from work I do once. And so I've been consciously building up a portfolio of dividend stocks and other cash flowing assets that, you know, the price may go up, the price may go down, but these are kind of a lot, in a lot of cases, these boring old fashioned companies like Target and AT&T and Chevron, where it's like, hey, they've paid a dividend for 50 years and they've grown it every year for, you know, the last 49 of those years or something like that. So building up that truly, truly passive cash flow has been an exciting extra experiment of mine.
Cool. Have you gotten the Bitcoin bug?
I should check my Bitcoin holdings. I own a fraction of a Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah. I'm still kicking myself in the butt for that. I started in, oh boy, when they were $100. And welp. Should have held on to them.
I'm the same way. I'd be like at the blackjack table and be like up $20 and be like, I'm good. You know, I can never be on these movies. Be like, I took down the house for $7 million. Like, no, I'm out. I'm good.
Yeah. Well, hey, if it was easy, then we'd all be millionaires, right? So
for sure.
Yeah. Okay. With all those streams of income, what do you call yourself? Are you a blogger, a writer, an infopreneur?
I've actually started calling myself a podcaster more and more. I've kind of leaned in to that. I think I put that on our second son's birth certificate. He was born in 2018. And my wife is like just rolling her eyes. This is like, for her, it's easy. She puts down engineer on everything. And it's like profession. Like, I don't know what to put. I never knew what to put. But I did put podcaster on there, and really kind of recognizing that as the main focus for me.
Cool. That's very interesting because, I mean, I have to look it up. I was reading, I think, a blog post from Ramit Sethi, and he did this experiment where every party he went to, he would say something else like writer, author, or an entrepreneur. And he said author was the one that worked the best. I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah. I've done author as well in the past, but if you just look at the straight book royalties, it's like a sliver of the income pie.
Interesting. Yeah, it's always interesting how, you know. Oh, sorry. I got to take a drink here. It's September and officially summer is over in Germany, so the temperature is dropping like crazy. Okay, so I was listening to another of your podcasts, and you were talking about the state of California and affiliate marketing. Did you go to court to fight the bad guys?
Did not go to court, but did go to Sacramento and the state assembly to try and lobby on behalf of the Performance Marketing Association, which was, you know, really coming under attack, you know, several years ago as the state legislatures, not just in California, but really around the country, were like, hey, we're losing all of this tax revenue because even though people are supposed to self-report and pay their sales and use tax on out-of-state purchases, nobody does that. And so we're losing all this revenue as a percentage of retail shifts from brick and mortar here in our state to Amazon and some of these other places. And so they're like, how can we get Amazon to collect tax? How can we get these out-of-state companies to collect tax? And what they came up with, which I'll hand it to them, was pretty creative, because the letter of the law based on some like court decision from the early 90s was, unless that company has a physical location in your state, they can't be compelled to collect the tax for you. Right. And so what the legislator did was like, yeah, we understand you don't have an office, you don't have a warehouse here, Amazon, but you have affiliates in California, people who are part of the Amazon Associates program. And what Amazon said, and what most other retailers did as well, was like, well, that's easy. We'll just cross off those people from our list. We will just fire all of our Amazon associates.
Wow.
And as a person who was running an affiliate business that relied on Amazon Associates income and income from these other out-of-state retailers as an affiliate, like, that was a really devastating move to my business. It was like, well, all of a sudden you're gonna sever your ties with me just because of where I live. I have this completely digital business that has no carbon footprint, that like, this makes zero sense. And so we're trying to lobby against that. And of course, Amazon, they cut some deals and they ended up starting to build distribution centers here, and it worked out. But I actually had to go rent an apartment in Nevada and move up to state line in Nevada for a few months while this all shook out, just to be able to keep operating.
Wow. Maybe that's why I thought you lived out in Arizona or something. That's cool though. You went and did that. I always respect people that, you know, go fight. And I remember Jeff Bezos, he fought a long time too against Washington, D.C., because that's why he put the headquarters in, I think, Arizona. Well, he moved it to Seattle first because of the tax laws. And then he moved, I think, the biggest warehouse to Arizona because they didn't have any state tax. So he fought it for a long time.
It's been a long time strategy of theirs. And they're kind of shifting away from that, like getting product closer to consumers just so they can deliver faster with Prime and Prime Now. But for a long time, like, they definitely saw no sales tax as a competitive advantage.
Yeah. I was proud of Jeff Bezos fighting against Washington, D.C. And then, that's a losing battle, you know. So, back to books and online stuff and your blog and Side Hustle Nation. What is your favorite audience building method? Or do you have a killer hack? Or what's your favorite list building method?
So the secret is just do a weekly podcast for 6 years, and then you'll get there. the podcast has definitely been my number one discovery channel, but not neglecting the written content as well. So even today, like I said, 3/4 of the traffic comes from Google. Now, a certain percentage of those people are looking, for branded searches, Side Hustle Nation, Side Hustle Show, stuff like that. But a lot of those searches are kind of keyword specific searches where different posts that I've written over the years rank for. So, and some of those are podcast episodes too. So it's like, reselling on Amazon, the post that or the podcast episode that we did on that ranks pretty well for a couple of years. Merch by Amazon, if you're searching for information on that specific Side Hustle, the podcast episode that we did is going to show up pretty highly in Google. So if you don't have show notes, if you don't have a written portion of your site, like, you're losing out on a ton of potential traffic. The big inflection point for me was in 2014, was in figuring out how to convert podcast listeners into email subscribers. So like I said, summer 2014, had around 1,000 people on the email list. I flipped the switch and realized that the podcast by itself does not a business make, but it can still be a content marketing channel for the greater business. So it's like, it's time to start treating it like that. And so I started to create these episode specific lead magnets or opt-in offers or content upgrades, right? Like, you're out walking the dog, or you're at the gym, or you're driving in your car, you're not in a great position usually to take notes on this content. Don't worry, I did it for you. I've created this highlight reel summary of all the top tips from today's guest, and you can find it over here at this easy to remember URL, right? Within 3 months, the email list was 3,000. Within 6 months, it was 6,000. That was a big inflection point for the show and for the business.
That is a very good tip. I kind of do that with my podcast, but now I'm going to really do that. Thank you very much.
You bet.
So what is your favorite funnel? And funnels can be a lot of things. They don't have to be just one software in ClickFunnels. You know, what do you have a favorite path?
That's an interesting one. I don't have the high ticket item to try and sell anybody. So my funnel is like, I'm gonna wear you down with hopefully compelling content over a period of months and years. And eventually maybe you'll click on an affiliate link or something right now. That's the main game plan for me. Mm-hmm. What I've added in the past couple of years is a, what do you call them? Kind of like interest specific onboarding sequences. I'll call them that.
Segmentation. Campaign,
yeah. In active campaign, I've got maybe 8 or 10 of these set up, depending on what you opt in for. I'm going to send you down a path or send you a series of emails relevant to that topic, because the Side Hustle show is really, really broad. Like, there's stuff on e-commerce and stuff on starting a freelancing business and stuff on starting a blog and podcast. And so instead of the old, you know, one size fits all autoresponder that I had in AWeber, in ActiveCampaign, I've been able to better segment those people and send them stuff that hopefully is more relevant, helpful, and interesting to them.
Yeah. Yeah. So actually, you kind of also said it. Your podcast is also the tip of your funnel now.
Yes, very much so.
Okay. Yeah, I'm always interested in that one because it's just exponential. You know, everybody has, some people do webinars and then paid advertising. That some people just swear by that. Paid advertising to a Facebook ad to a webinar, and then on the back end or the end of the webinar, you know, then the sale or whatever, follow up with email. So what is your take on paid advertising?
If you can make paid advertising profitable, you have found the holy grail. Like, anytime you can trade a dollar for two, like, I'll make that trade all day long. That's what built the shoe business. Was heavily, heavily reliant on Google AdWords for traffic. And it was that same thing, like, buy a click for 25 cents, resell it for 50 on average. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, lather, rinse, repeat, and scale that up as best you can.
And so do you have a specific or a favorite channel right now?
I'm not running any paid ads at the moment. Actually had my Facebook ads account shut down a couple years ago for,
wow,
who knows? I don't know. They don't really tell you why. Huh. Some policy violation, and it was, you know, promoting similar stuff to what everybody else was promoting in the personal finance space. I'm not really sure what I did. So I've since been reinstated a little bit, but it's got me kind of gun shy or hesitant to really go all in on that. On top of that, the ads that I was running were profitable, but the tracking wasn't amazing. So it was like the margins weren't big enough such that it was like, okay, let's bump this thing up to $1,000 a day. Like, it wasn't quite ready to do that yet.
Yeah. So, but if it's the holy grail, then would you, if you found the holy grail in advertising, you got something going really good, would you then neglect your other list building activities like the podcast or the funnel or email? I mean, would you do that? Would you just switch then over to the paid advertising?
That's a good question. It's definitely a labor of love to do the show, so it's hard to imagine stopping doing that. So maybe you could bring someone on, team member or Facebook ads expert, to kind of manage that other element, that other side of the business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the temptation is very high. A lot of people think paid advertising is a silver bullet, but those things are expensive and you're going to waste a lot of money trying to find that holy grail, you know? But yeah, and yeah, then, you know, as more people get in, then the costs go up and stuff. So I like your take on it, though, with the holy grail.
That's what ended up happening. And so it's like that's almost your imperative, is to, like, if you have found profitable traffic, like, get while the getting's good. Because in the shoe business, over the course of those 7, 8, 10 years, like, the costs continue to rise. And on the flip side, like, my commissions from the advertisers, like, kind of got squeezed. So I was kind of, you know, playing in this margin in the middle, and it didn't last forever. I naively thought, like, hey, this could be my thing. I'll be selling shoes till I'm 80, you know. It didn't work that way. So if you can run paid traffic, you know, definitely milk that while you can.
Yeah. That's a strike while the iron's hot. I learned that too with Amazon ads. You know, when Amazon first opened up, man, geez, it was just so easy to make whatever, 200%. And now, you know, everybody's getting in, so those clicks are getting more expensive. And yeah, the gold rush is, the golden day, whatever, is over. Yeah. Talking about Amazon, who is your favorite author?
Favorite author? Who do I read everything they put out?
I mean, doesn't have to be nonfiction or any, you know, it can be anything.
Well, probably the best that I've read this year is Shoe Dog, is Phil Knight's story of Nike. It was just a really interesting story. I had no idea, for example, that Nike started as a side hustle. It didn't even start as Nike for the first 10 years.
Wow.
He started by importing Onitsukus from Japan. It was a really well-told story. And so that was an interesting one. I think Chris Guillebeau is a fantastic storyteller. He's got some stuff in the side hustle niche. Pat Flynn is obviously incredible. Superfans was awesome this summer. But yeah, that's what I'm going after these days.
Yeah. So if you could only gift somebody one marketing or business book, what would it be?
Oh, that's a good one. Normally I go with The Go-Giver by Bob Berg, which is essentially about helping people, like, you know, serve first and trust that you're going to find a way to monetize later, which has definitely been my story. Not necessarily how I started, definitely started with, like, okay, how do I make money online? And then have come to realize, like, oh, money comes from helping people. And I think I got lucky on that in the shoe business, but have been more conscious of that in later projects.
I haven't heard that one, The Go-Giver.
Yeah. Is it good? It's like a very short kind of parable about, you know, somebody in sales and how do I make my numbers? And it's like, well, you know, go out and help somebody.
Go-Giver by Bob Berg. Okay, cool. So what's your number one productivity hack?
The thing that's probably, well, a couple things. I know you asked for only one, but a couple things have been really important. First is the habit of writing down your top three priorities for the next day, the night before. So instead of waking up and having this onboarding time, you know, ramp up, you know, boot up time of checking email and checking Facebook, it's like, no, you know exactly what you need to do and in what order you need to tackle them. Because that's what, you know, yesterday Nick said was most important. So that's been really good. And the second thing that's been super helpful is creating theme days, or mostly what that means is like batching as many meetings and recordings as I can on one day a week. So for example, it's Tuesday, today's meeting day, today's recording day. That frees up the rest of the time for more deep work sessions, for, you know, longer term projects. And just like, instead of having like, oh, well, I only have half an hour before my next call, so I can't really start anything. So just, you end up wasting a ton of time that way. So that's been a big shift for me the last few years.
Cool. Yeah. I've experimented with that too, with batching. That's a good one. And, you know, I did that one. Maybe I got it from you, write down your top three prios. Do you remember who did that first? Was that this Charles Schwab guy from 100 years ago?
Oh, it's possible. I definitely did not invent it. So I won't take credit for it.
Yeah. No, it's a good one. I read it also. Okay. You've got the three prios. Do you have any other kind of planning technique or project management thing for your blog? You know, how do you keep it all together? You do visualizations or the 12-week year or mind maps, whatever?
pretty poorly. I probably could do a much better job of this. Like, I look at other people like, oh, here's my content calendar going out 9 months. Like, nope, that does not exist over here. What I tend to do is work in 4-week sprints. And so I've found that is long enough to get something meaningful done, but short enough where the deadline is still real. And so that for me is 16 working days in most cases. And it's like, okay, what am I going to have to do to make that a reality and kind of reverse engineer or itemize out the milestones or the little tasks inside of that project that need to happen. For example, this summer was working on a course on, you know, how to start your first side hustle, how to start a service business and get off the sidelines. And, you know, so that was done over the course of 3 months. And so I had these, you know, three different 4-week sprints inside of that. You know, first one was outline the course. Second one was, you know, kind of do a pre-launch and film the course. And then I forget what the third one was, but it was like set up in such a way where it's like, okay, here's the number one focus and priority. And because otherwise it makes it easier to say no to stuff that doesn't align with that, or at least not right now. And just gives me some focus to get something done, to move it forward.
Yeah. That's almost answers my next question. Very related. So because I am easily distracted with the bells and whistles. And then, so, you know, there's this thing called 30-day monk syndrome. So for example, Facebook Messenger bot messaging list building was big for a while. Now you don't hear anything about it. And so how do you combat this 30-day monk syndrome and the new shiny thing syndrome?
Well, having those sprint goals helps because I can at least table it. So sometimes if an interesting message comes across my inbox, I'll just forward it to, you know, 6 weeks at nudgemail.com. Nudgemail is a cool service where it'll, like, you know, ping back to your inbox later. I think they probably have a built-in like snooze feature or something now. Gmail does, but Nudgemail is one that I've been using for years. It's like, sometimes I'll add that idea to my calendar, like on a time where I expect to have more. So I have like Thursday afternoons, typically like for marketing or growth projects. So if I see an interesting post on a new SEO tactic or something, like I will, you know, move that for 2 weeks out on a Thursday afternoon or something, you know, optimistically thinking like, okay, that's interesting, but not right now, but let me put a pin in that so I can revisit it later.
Interesting. Nudgemail. Yeah. I think it's built in Google now, or it's that streak plugin. It lets you snooze an email. So, but you use Nudgemail, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it's an old tool. I've been using it for years. So there's probably, there's probably something else at this
Nudgemail.com. I'll just write it down here. So cool. So what's the one thing you would do differently if you had to do it all over again?
Lots of things. You know, that's hard because like there's value in this journey and you learn something from every mistake and every step along the way.
Yeah.
I would have, like in hindsight, a couple of things, like obviously would have gone bigger on the shoe business while the getting was good. Mm-hmm. Would have loved to sell out at a nice multiple at the peak of that instead of, you know, riding it out for years kind of on this slow decline. I would have loved to have started podcasting a little bit earlier. I think that would have just accelerated things. I wish I had figured out that the podcast was content marketing a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. I think that would have accelerated things a little bit. I mean, all this stuff is hindsight, but it's more just, you know, what do you do going forward?
Most people tell me they would have started their email list sooner. Well, that's interesting you said podcast, because I'm learning that now too. Podcasting is one of the smartest things I ever started. So, yeah.
So you almost have to get in your like the first 50 episodes are, relatively speaking, like are horrible for me. It's like, don't go back and listen to those. But, you know, you almost have to get them under your belt to be able to produce the next 50,
Are you on the weekly, one per week? What's your schedule?
Yeah, generally one a week with an occasional bonus episode thrown in.
Cool. Yeah, I know some people are crazy. One a day. You know, John Lee Dumas, that guy's on fire, right?
Right.
Yeah. No, I can't handle that though. But so yeah, one per week. That sounds good. That sounds good. Yeah. So do you do any kind of mindfulness or meditation
not consistently. It's one of these habits that, you know, you can read all the material and you understand all the benefits of this and you're mentally on board with it, mm-hmm. but then just making it a priority has not happened for me consistently. So I'll go in different streaks where I'll, you know, do it every day for a month. And I don't know, I have yet to see the light on meditation. And then there's some data that suggests like, well, no, you need to do it, you know, for 25 hours or something cumulative. And then all of a sudden these, you know, synapses start to repair themselves and you get better at focusing and all this stuff. I don't know. Like, are you a seasoned meditator?
I recommend for people that don't like meditation, I recommend highly Tai Chi. Because I did, younger in Southern California, just around, I'm from Orange County, so a big Asian influence and the best martial artist in the world right from the source. So I didn't know it, but I was doing meditation the whole time too. And but if you don't like meditation, then do Tai Chi. That it's called moving meditation. And Qigong is very similar. I don't know enough about it because I think Tai Chi is really, I wouldn't say they're very, they go hand in hand. So, and when I did that, you know, I thought it was going to be funny. I thought I was putting it down and stuff, but then later on I said, hey, this isn't about sports, man. This is an internal martial art. And now I really miss it when I don't do it. So I really, it's moving meditation. So if you don't like sitting or those other versions, try Tai Chi. It might surprise you.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what's on the horizon for you?
Next projects. I'm awful at this, planning stuff.
Yeah. You're usually the talker, huh? You're usually the interviewer.
That's right. Now somebody flips the mic on me. Focusing on written content for the site, leaning into that a little bit, continuing to produce the show. And the sponsorships on the show and affiliate offers through the site have kind of been the main pillars of the stool, or the main legs of the stool, for the last couple of years. I'm trying to add a third in the form of this online course and, you know, working with some, you know, early enrollment students to try and, you know, make any necessary adjustments to the material and the delivery of that material. And hopefully that can be, you know, hopefully it can be valuable for the people going through it, number one, but hopefully that can end up being kind of the third leg of the stool for Side Hustle Nation.
Cool. Is there a name for it? Can you talk about it? Can you pitch it, the course?
Sure. So this is the Side Hustle Quick Start Challenge, and it aims to help the people who always are raising their hand and saying, I don't have a side hustle idea, which is the biggest piece of the pie every time I run a survey. You know, 40-50% of the audience says, I'm still looking for an idea. And so I wanted to put something together to help that segment of the population come up with ideas, you know, select which ones are most interesting, exciting, or doable for them, validate those in the real world, and go out and get their first customers.
Cool. And timeline? Start date, you have an, what do you call it?
So I've been doing open and close kind of mini launches to this point. Hopefully, long-term, I'd love to have it be an evergreen product that people can enroll in all the time, unless customer feedback dictates otherwise.
Oh, cool. Right on.
So if you do sidehustlenation.com/hustle101, that's kind of like the, you know, tell me when it's ready kind of page.
Okay, cool. Sidehustlenation/101, right?
Yes.
Cool. Got it.
Or yeah, hustle 101.
Hustle. Sidehustlenation.com?
Yes.
Okay. /101, right on. So now I got to do this to you, you know. I got to ask your question that you ask at the end of each podcast. What's your number one tip for the listeners out there?
Self-publishing related, anything? It's like side hustle related. Where do you want to go?
Oh, all of it. Give us all of it. Yeah.
It's really to figure out why you want to do the thing that you're thinking about doing, because like, it's not easy. Like, it's so much easier to go sit and watch Netflix or, you know, just not do the hard thing. So figuring out why you want to do this, like, what does that really mean for you? What does that mean for your family? What does that mean for your bottom line? What does that mean for your personal well-being and satisfaction? And it's got to come from inside. Like, I was talking to a personal trainer friend of mine and asked him kind of the same question. Like, what separates the people who actually get results versus the people who, you know, gain all this weight back or just like, it doesn't happen. And he's like, without even hesitation, like, they got to want it. Like, if they really, really want it, they're ready to make this change.
Cool. Do you have time for a grab bag question?
Let's do it.
All right. If you could eat dinner with anyone, past, present, or future, who would it be?
I don't know if this is sad or not, but it would really just be my wife, because, you know, you've got kids that are 3.5, 1.5. Like, time together alone is very much at a premium right now. So yeah. That sounds awesome.
That's cool. I like that. No, that's a new one. Haven't heard that one yet.
I don't know. All right. I don't want to, like, you know, go sit down with Lin-Manuel from Hamilton or something. I would get like nervous and like, I don't know what I'd say.
That's cool. Yeah. You can go a lot of different ways with that one. So, okay. Where can we all reach you online?
The Side Hustle Show podcast is available in Apple Podcasts and Spotify and wherever you like to get your shows. And of course, we mentioned the monster list of side hustle ideas. That's sidehustlenation.com/ideas for the constantly updated laundry list of different ways to make extra money that you could start today. There's no opt-in required over there. So we'd love to have you check it out and let me know what you think.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Nick. It's been real and it's been really fun. And it was great to talk to you finally. And thank you.
Likewise. Glad we got a chance to hang out.
Definitively. All right. I'll see you next time then.
All right. See ya.
Okay, my friends, if you like that podcast, then remember to go to zbooks.co and go get all the materials to start your authoring career. We have a 7-day challenge every week, so there's no excuse to not finish your book. And remember, please go to iTunes and upvote this podcast and Google Play. Okay, I look forward to seeing you at the top.